Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Gordon Chang, who is the author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World, and The Coming Collapse of China. He is a writer, lawyer, and international policy analyst who is a columnist at Forbes and blogs at World Affairs Journal. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gordon Chang.
Thank you so much.
And clearly, the New York Times has been hacked, and I don't think there's much mystery as to who did it, Chinese hackers. And it appears to be fairly clear that it was in response to stories that they ran about Chinese Prime Minister Wen Jiabai's how he'd accumulated this multi-billion dollar fortune, at least his family had. Now, apparently, that story was blocked, both in English and Chinese language versions of the paper's website. But what we're learning now from today's New York Times is that they hacked into the New York Times while this story was being prepared, presumably looking to find the sources of the story. So that would indicate to me that these are probably intelligence people as opposed to hackers.
Yes. Well, the New York Times story mentions that these attacks have been traced to an organization in China which has been responsible for cyber intrusions on hundreds of Western organizations, including American defense contractors. So, as you say, there's no mystery about why and who and about all the circumstances regarding this cyber intrusions.
So is this the same organization that put that sleeper inside a lot of government computers, and including the Department of Energy, and where they're able to apparently get the designs for all of the latest U.S. nuclear warheads and God knows what else?
Yes, and clearly what we've got here is a situation where the Chinese government has this systematic campaign to find information, not only from government sources, but defense contractors, dissidents, and now news organizations, because it's not just the New York Times. The Wall Street Journal reported that its computers have been hacked by China as well. So this appears to be an epidemic.
Well, Gordon Chang, apparently on Thursday, the Wall Street Journal revealed that they'd been hacked, and the Bloomberg News were hacked apparently following a June 29th article that detailed wealth accumulated by the family of Xi Jinping, who is the country's new leader.
Yes, and clearly what's going on here is that this is, people say, well, the Communist Party is a threat to its own people. Well, that's certainly right. But it's also a threat to ours because they're attacking free institutions and free societies by trying to affect the political discourse inside the United States. So this really has become a problem not just for China, but for us as well.
Well, it would seem, and again, Gordon Chang is the author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World, and The Coming Collapse of China. He's a writer, lawyer, and international policy analyst who is a columnist at Forbes and blogs at World Affairs Journal. It would seem, though, that China's main focus is on its own people, and the leadership is clearly looking over its shoulder at its own people who somehow or other seem to be able to get this news in spite of the fact that China is being ranked by the Reporters Without Borders Press Freedom Index as 173 out of 179 countries in the world. So it's a heavily censored media there. I'm not sure that their efforts to influence our media, I've seen that they've taken out full-page ads in the New York Times, et cetera, about economic opportunities and stuff like that. But I don't think they're going to have much traction here. But they surely do at home. And what surprises me is the extent to which apparently the Chinese people find out about these things. By the way, today CNN was blacked out in reporting on this New York Times story.
Yes. Well, I think what's going on here is that the Chinese government has tried to control the narrative about China around the world. And one of the ways to do that is, first of all, to find out what international news media organizations are saying, but also to try to intimidate reporters. And to a certain extent, they've been successful because they have affected coverage of China. Now, I think that that's sort of, those days are over because clearly we've reached a tipping point. But, you know, China is going to continue to try. And because of that, you know, we do have to be vigilant about these things.
Well, I think the clear tactic that they've been using, and particularly with the New York Times and other American news organizations, is that they hold up visas. And it's very hard for these news organizations to get their people in there and get them accredited. That seems to be the latest tactic.
Yes, well, they've also used that against academics. And this is a tactic that has actually worked, because I do think that academics self-censor themselves in order to make sure that they do get visas. Because if they don't get visas, then they can't continue their work. So this is a tactic that has worked against academics, and they're now using it against journalists as well. This is something that they've done for quite some time, so we really shouldn't be too surprised that they try to use all instruments of state power against the media.
Well, they've successfully blacklisted Perry Link, who I often speak with, who's a China expert from Princeton, to whom the Tiananmen papers were leaked from a high-level Politburo source. So, you know, the fact that so much of the dirty laundering of the Politburo itself came out in the Bo Xilai case, and clearly there were sources, which is why the hackers were hacking into the New York Times before they printed that story in October of last year about the fabulous wealth of the Chinese leaders. The fact that they have sources would indicate to me that things are changing inside. And again, I get back to trying to get a handle from you, Gordon Chang, about the apparent insecurity of communist Chinese leaders about their capitalist riches.
Yeah, well, certainly they've got to be very concerned about it because, you know, especially with regard to Premier Wen Jiabao, he was the acceptable face of communism. He was the top leader who cried at the scenes of natural disasters, who visited the downtrodden, who called for democracy. And now we learned that he's no different than the other Chinese leaders. You know, he's just a crook like the rest of them. And so I think that they are really very sensitive about it. And, of course, they would be sensitive about the Bloomberg reporting on the family of Xi Jinping, because right now he is the leader of China, as you point out. So, you know, people can't say that corruption is limited only to the bottom part of the Communist Party. With all of this reporting, it's clear that it also affects the top of the party. And the amount that these leaders have been able to take one way or another is just fabulous. It's just in the billions and billions of dollars.
So what's happening then inside of China in terms of you know, they're clearly probably the most, I imagine they're about the most sophisticated country in the world in terms of trying to control the internet. But ultimately, yes. The good news about the internet is it's maybe it is uncontrollable. Maybe, you know, I'm not sure whether it is, but my sense is that people always find ways around information, and the fact that the Chinese censors block out these stories like in the New York Times and CNN, and yet the Chinese people find out about it. And how do they do that? Well, it has to be that through the internet. And one of the things I was just noticing recently was that a bunch of internet activists in China brought down a Chinese Communist Party censor who was a complete hypocrite and had been paying off some woman for sex who was an employee of his.
So, yes, well, you know, you're absolutely right, because although, as you say, China has the most sophisticated set of internet controls, clearly has one of the largest, probably the largest group of censors, full stop, they have not been able to really control information like they were able to during the Maoist years. And that's because China's a more open society. People do learn about these things. You know, they can censor the New York Times and Bloomberg websites, but enough people find out. And so really what we have got is a situation where the Communist Party is concerned about the narrative inside China, and the party no longer controls it. I think the Chinese people are very much taking their destiny into their own hands.
And so give us a sense then of how the leadership is riding this tiger.
Well, they're riding it, and I think that the one sense is that they can no longer control the narrative in Chinese society. What they can do is they can prevent people from acting on their beliefs. When you look around Chinese society from the top to the bottom, I actually think that most people do not believe that a one-party system is appropriate for China's modernizing society. That doesn't mean that people are going to take to the streets to try to change that political system, but it does mean that the Communist Party can no longer influence thought. What it can do is it can prevent people from going to the streets and trying to change the political system from the bottom up.
But that's only a temporary barrier, is it not? I mean, you've got people like Ai Weiwei. They come after prominent people, and I don't know whether you saw the very inspiring film about him and how he, fought the system, and obviously the system came down hard on him. But there are thousands and thousands of Ai Weiweis every day, aren't there, in small ways that are resisting?
Yes, that's certainly true. But, you talk about Ai Weiwei himself. He's still in Beijing. He is still affecting political discourse, not only in the capital city, but around China. He had that, for instance, that very famous photograph he had taken of himself in a gas mask because he was complaining about the smog in Beijing. Well, that photograph got distributed around China and around the world, and it does change people's views of the regime. And as you say, it's not just Ai Weiwei, but there are thousands, tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of Ai Weiweis basically doing the same thing, perhaps on a smaller basis, but also reaching a number of people around China. And that's how society is changing. And it's changing much for the better because Chinese people are having these conversations among themselves about a number of important topics.
Again, I'm speaking with Gordon Chang, author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World and the Coming Collapse of China. He's a writer, lawyer, and international policy analyst who is a columnist at Forbes and blogs at World Affairs Journal. So what's happening then vis-a-vis the divisions within the Chinese Communist Party leadership? And it seems in many ways that this nuclear test that's coming up in North Korea might well expose those divisions. And I know you wrote that book, Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. My understanding is that the support for the North Korean regime, even though many in the top leadership in China are exasperated by the dynasty ruling North Korea, but the support is largely in the military. And yet, the foreign ministry types are furious with the North Koreans. And they joined recently in UN Security Council sanctions against them over a rocket launch. So you can only imagine that when this bomb goes off, they're going to be even stiffer sanctions. And do you think the struggle between the pro-North Korean and the anti-North Korean factions inside China are going to come to the fore?
Well, I think that they probably will. The one thing about Chinese foreign policy in general is that you need a consensus to change it. And right now, as you point out, there are a lot of foreign ministry professionals, there are academics, there are people in the think tank community in Beijing who realize that China's policies with regard to North Korea are really not in the country's long-term interest. But there is no consensus to change the policy because there are a number of hardliners, many of them in the military, who want to keep the policy the same. So, although there is some movement in Beijing on North Korea, there isn't as much as there should be. And when we see this third nuclear detonation on the part of by North Korea, it'll be very interesting to watch if China substantially changes its policies. I think that there will be some change, but not enough.
Well, how about a change on the American side in the sense that the justification for Chinese hawks in supporting North Korea, even though it's a very obnoxious failed state, and they're already feeling and the Chinese basically could pull the plug on them in a minute. But they don't, my understanding is they don't want American troops on the Yellow River. They don't want to go back to the Korean War. And that's a legitimate concern on their part.
I think that if the North Korean regime were to collapse soon, that there probably would be an understanding that American troops would not be on the Yellow River. And there really wouldn't be a need for that. Because American troops, there's about 28,500 of them in South Korea right now, are there to protect the South Koreans from the North Koreans. If the North Korean state fails, then I think that you're going to find a very substantial reduction in American forces in South Korea, just because we will not need them there. And so I don't think the issue is going to be that a big one. It's one that can easily be solved between Washington and Beijing.
So, Gordon Chang, just then back to the story of the day, which is the hacking of the New York Times. The New York Times ran a front page story explaining how they've been hacked by Chinese hackers, presumably at the behest of the government, if not this organization that you mentioned. Tell us more about this organization, because it would seem to be obviously a part of the military intelligence apparatus, because they targeted, for example, Los Alamos. The DOE's labs over here. They've gone after defense contractors to get the latest technology, etc. So that it seems to be strategic. It seems to be planned. And in this case, going after the New York Times, trying to find out who was leaking information about the fabulous riches of Chinese leaders, it's clear that the top people in China were instigating the witch hunt.
Well, clearly they were. There are a number of shadowy groups in China that do the hacking. I mean, there are some that are actually part of the Chinese military, the People's Liberation Army. There are some that are actually part of the country's security services, the Ministry of State Security, for instance. And then you have these networks that are loosely affiliated with the Chinese government. And we don't really know too much about the group that conducted the hacking, except that the Times did say that they had been involved in cyber intrusions of hundreds of organizations around the world, including American defense contractors. That would suggest that they do have close connections with the Chinese military, if maybe they're part of the military itself. But at the end of the day, all of these groups operate with the blessing of the Chinese government. And so, in a sense, it almost doesn't matter which particular department of the government is actually conducting this. This really is part of Beijing's master plan.
Well, so far, the Chinese hackers have not just gone after the New York Times. They've gone after Lockheed Martin, Coca-Cola, Google. I'm talking about hacking into. There was this ghost net that came up in Canada, hacking into information about the Dalai Lama and Tibetan activists. NASA has been hacked into 47 times, apparently, in 2011 alone, and JPL as well as Caltech. South Korea has been hacked into. The Pentagon, of course, the 2007 intrusion with that sleeper bug that apparently downloaded an enormous amount of stuff. And then now you've got the New York Times. So it's that's quite a list.
Yeah, it was quite a list. And, if you're not on the list, yeah, you're nobody. So.
Right. Well, I'm afraid I'm just getting a signal here that I've run out of time. Thank you for joining us, Gordon Chang.
Well, thank you so much.
Again, I've been speaking with Gordon Chang, author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World and the Coming Collapse of China. He's a writer, lawyer, and international policy analyst who is a columnist at Forbes and blogs at World Affairs Journal. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again on Sunday at 11 a.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.